It's Ian Pickus, and we're back in the Congressional Corner today with Tim Versalotti, director of the Western New England University poll and professor of political science. Tim, on this show in recent weeks, we've spoken with the president of the Quincy City Council and a lawyer named John Deaton, Republicans who would like to take on Senator Elizabeth Warren in November. First is the primary the day after Labor Day. Does Elizabeth Warren face any real trouble in her bid for a third term?
The metrics would suggest she's fine. In terms of campaign finance, the most recent reporting period ended June 30th, and at the end of that period, Elizabeth Warren still had $4.9 million cash on hand in her account. John Deaton had $974,769, and Ian Kane had $48,392. There is a third Republican running, Bob Antonellis, an industrial engineer from Medford, and he had about $9,600 in the bank at the close of the reporting period. So by that metric, Elizabeth Warren's in pretty good shape, and she's an excellent fundraiser. If she needed additional resources, that wouldn't be very hard for her to summon. Polling has been not abundant in this race, in part because no one's expecting a very close race. But the most recent UMass Amherst poll in May matched Elizabeth Warren to each of these other candidates, John Deaton, Ian Kane, and Bob Antonellis. And in each case, her lead was anywhere from 23 to 27 points. The name recognition is often an issue with new candidates. If you don't have a strong standing in the polling, you're going to face a challenge in terms of making a compelling argument to campaign contributors. The interesting thing for Ian Kane and John Deaton, they are both advocates of a robust market in cryptocurrency and are pushing back on calls for government regulations of that market, which is something that Elizabeth Warren has been focusing on and will continue to focus on. So the crypto world has been supportive of these candidates as well in terms of contributions, but that's probably not enough to make them competitive. What will help whoever emerges from the September 3rd primary is no doubt there will be some debates. And when you're on a debate stage, you suddenly have an implied level of parity with an incumbent. But even there, you can judge from Elizabeth Warren's actions, she's spending a fair amount of time as a surrogate, first for President Biden, now for Vice President Harris. And so her internal polling also must be reassuring her about her position in the race.
So I read the other day, and no surprise here, that Vermont Governor Phil Scott remains the most popular governor in America. How's Governor Healey doing these days in Massachusetts?
Yeah, so that was a coveted title that Charlie Baker held for quite some time when he was governor of Massachusetts. These ratings come from Morning Consult, which does a lot of national and state level online polling, and they do a quarterly job approval measure for each of the nation's 50 governors, and then they rank them in order. And sure enough, Phil Scott, 81% job approval. That eclipses even the best readings that Charlie Baker used to get. Number one in the country, as we handicap the Derby for vice presidential running mate for Kamala Harris, it's worth pointing out that Andy Beshear, the governor of Kentucky, one of the top tier contenders for running mate, is the nation's second most popular governor in the latest Morning Consult data, which came out recently. Where is Maura Healey? Number 14, respectable, 59% job approval. most governors would be delighted to have that. No Charlie Baker, but that and the appeal of Charlie Baker has been difficult to explain. There could be some gender effects going on here. Neither one of them is a hardcore partisan, he or Healy. Neither one of them does a massive battle with the Massachusetts legislature. Just Healy doesn't, you know, she's in the upper 50s. And most governors would be happy to have that.
Battle with the legislature brings me to State Auditor Diana DeSaglio, who was successful in getting a ballot question on November's ballot about whether she should be empowered to audit the legislature. She's a former member of the legislature, and the current members, frankly, do not want her to audit the legislature. Do we have any idea about what average voters think of this, if they think of it at all?
Well, the very last phrase in your
we're trying.
Yeah. Well, when pollsters ask Massachusetts voters about this, it's fair to say this is a new issue for most people. But when the question is posed using some of the verbiage that voters may see on the ballot in November, this is a very popular idea to allow the state auditor to audit the state legislature's accounts. I think if you talk to the average voter, most of them might say they can't do that now. This makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't we want some oversight of the legislative branch? There are lots of technical reasons why it hasn't happened to this point in time, and to be fair, some political reasons as well. But the early polling on this question shows that if the vote were held today, it would pass very easily. So, but at the same time, for an issue that people don't know a whole lot about, their views are not very strongly held. And so there will be a huge messaging battle this fall. And what we have seen with ballot questions before, things that seem pretty popular and fairly obvious, once it goes through the meat grinder of messaging, direct mail, robocalls, social media, the numbers can shift. And it will be very interesting to watch this question to see if that happens.
Yes, and there's some debate about the constitutionality of it. The Attorney General, in her opinion, Andrea Joy Campbell, says the auditor does not have the power to audit the legislature. So just to wrap up here, and I've always wondered about this, maybe it's just because the legislators stay there for a month anyway, but how come the Massachusetts state budget being late for the 14th year in a row is not the scandal that it is in New York State when the budget is late?
Well, I think you answered your own question there. 14 years in a row.
It's not news, in other words.
Yeah, it's become part of how Beacon Hill operates. And something to keep in mind, and I'm not drawing a contrast to any other state, but if we think about budgets in general, when the fiscal year runs out June 30th, the state government continues to function. Services continue to be provided. Payments, social service payments and support continues to go out the door. If we had the type of system that the federal government has, where there's the potential of a government shutdown if there isn't a budget or some kind of continuing resolution in place, I think we'd see a very different set of political dynamics. But as it stands, the ship stays afloat. It keeps sailing, a course not always well charted. And I think that's why a lot of Massachusetts voters, if you were to go out and do a person on the street survey today, would say, oh, there's no budget? Or by the time this airs, there will be a budget. I had no idea. So that's why we don't see the kind of drama that we see when the federal government is about to run out of money.
There's nothing like a padlocked national park to make the newscast, that's for sure.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Yep, you're right about that.
Well, Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University Poll and professor of political science. It's always great to have you on the Congressional Corner, Tim, and I look forward to checking in as we get closer to the fall election.
Me too. Thank you, Ian.